nationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author Steve Klein sits down with the most fascinating difference makers in Dallas-Fort Worth. Hear from top CEOs, local entrepreneurs, and key playmakers in business right now with your host, Steve Klein.
Leonardo da Vinci once said, "The Lord gives us everything at the price of effort." Hi, I'm Steve Klein, and welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. In the studio today are two guests who understand the price of effort. Our first playmaker is the manager of a wealth management firm, while our second playmaker is a business hippie. With us today is the managing director of a company that guides high net worth families and charitable organizations in their investment decisions, while our second playmaker developed a special box and children's stories as a result of a four-letter word. These great playmakers are Stan Stevenson. Stan is managing director of Sendero Wealth Management here in Dallas. And Chris Phelps. Chris is founder of Tacky Box. And we're going to begin today's show with Chris. Those who have partnered with her during her 16-year business career have dubbed Chris Phelps a business hippie and mom by Emma and Jake, her two children. But Chris is a self-proclaimed recovering CPA turned entrepreneur. She hung her own shingle in July 2011 and launched a series of projects and companies across multiple industries. Her latest project, Tacky Box, which we're going to discuss in a few moments, is special because it all began with her daughter and has become a family business. Chris, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here. Doing all the reading about you and understanding what you do, I'm tremendously interested in where this interview is going to go. Now, you're obviously a creative entrepreneur. How does a conservative CPA become a business hippie?
Great question. And I think that I have always been a business hippie at heart. I think that was instilled in me by my parents, unbeknownst to me. And then I went the CPA route because I liked math, kind of nerdy, and it was easy for me. But then I jumped ship. Once I realized I probably wasn't fit for corporate America, I jumped ship and began working at a very entrepreneurial company, D Magazine, and worked my way up there. And once that became a more corporate, larger entity, I decided to take my business building skills out on my own and do my own thing.
Well, I can see how that's kind of moved you along from being a CPA to selling at D Magazine, which is a story in itself we were talking about before the show started. But as the way you were raised, based on what you were saying, the small farm in East Texas and the type of person that, if nothing else, your mother, because I read a little about her bio, how did you end up as a CPA? You said you liked numbers, but why a CPA, as conservative a job as that is?
I have absolutely no idea, other than accounting was fun to me. I took it in high school, and I did well, and I ended up doing UIL and placed really high in state and got a scholarship and just sort of went with it. And my mom actually all along the way said, "Are you sure you want to do this? Are you sure you want to do this?" So that's the route I took.
Well, you did that for a while. How did you end up at D Magazine?
The stars aligned.
Sometimes that happens, right?
I decided I didn't want to do that anymore. And so I left. I was in New York at the time, came to Dallas because I had this where my college roommate lived. And I ended up meeting the advertising director at D, who looked at me and said, "Can you do sales?" And I said, "Sure, I can do sales." And so I went in and interviewed, not really taking it 100% seriously because I was still interviewing for finance and accounting jobs in Dallas. But when I met the Allisons who own it, I just got fired up and I wanted to work with them. So I did, and it was a great 8 years.
Now, were you working at DMAG? No, you started some other businesses when you developed Tacky Box, which is where we're going to be going in a few moments. So you left D-Magazine and started some other businesses that you put together.
I did. And those were mainly I have a medical distribution business, and I've also done some consulting work for different people that I've met over the years.
Well, let's talk about Tacky Box.
Let's do. That's what your passion is.
Yes. That's what's on the website, and that's why you're here to talk.
Right.
How did that start? Tell us the story.
Okay. So my daughter was a kindergartner at the time, and halfway through her kindergarten year, we're standing in the kitchen. I'm making dinner. She's telling me about her day, and all of a sudden she drops a four-letter word, And so I just froze. I wasn't sure what to say, but I paused and said, Emma, you have a very important choice to make. You can choose to repeat the tacky words and actions that you see in this world, or you can choose to refrain and replace those with kind words. And I said, so go in your room, think about it, come back and let me know what your choice is. And so I say this all the time, but I was sweating bullets, hoping she's going to make the right choice. And out she comes and she says, I don't want to be tacky. And she did ask me, you're not tacky, right, Mommy? And I was like, no, I'm not. And so we high-fived and we ended up making the tacky box. And I encouraged her to write the word that she had used down on a piece of paper, which was a symbol of her choice not to pick up tacky words and actions, and lock it in the box, remove it from her heart and from her mind. And she did, and it worked.
Now, was this something she used on a daily basis or worked with or had in front of her and was part of her life?
We use it all the time now. I mean, all the time. Both of my kids have one because it's very important for personal responsibility that they have their own, because they're in charge of their, you know, the way that they see the world on their own. And so we have them front and center in the house, in the kitchen. And anytime anything happens, you know, the first one to see it is the one to call it out. We laugh. We were watching the AMAs, and Justin Timberlake was doing his performance, and he said, shut up. And so my daughter jumps up and runs to the kitchen, grabs her pad of paper, writes it down, and locks it in the tacky box and comes back. So it's just that way to monitor the world around you.
Well, we're going to talk about what you told me about earlier as you're taking this further from words to behaviors also, which is what part of what shut up is. But how did this go from something for your daughter, Emma, who was a few years old, 4 years old, 5 years old in kindergarten, and it's taken to a business now where your mother has worked with you and you've put all this together and it's now a product you're selling on tackybox.com.
Right. Well, it started with that four-letter word, and then it really did evolve into a collaborative effort to make the world a kinder place. You know, as my daughter rolled it out with just language, my son, who was four at the time, he added actions to the box. So he wasn't saying tacky words necessarily, but he was certainly pushing his sister, kicking his mom. And so we used actions to add to it. And then what I saw, which was such a beautiful thing, was when my kids took this lesson to school, their friends around them started picking it up as well. And this ripple effect occurred. And so, you know, when I look at the world that I would like to create for my kids when they're my age, it starts here. And if we can go back to kids when they're young and teach them that kindness is cool through a tool like this, the world's going to look differently when they're older. And so based on the way that I've built businesses before, which is my business hippie model, a lot of people who saw my passion, who have expertise in other areas, raised their hand and said, hey, I'm in. Let's do this. And so we turned it into a business.
Well, if you and I were talking earlier, that's similar to the business I'm in, helping people change and do the right things. And as children, the joke I told you earlier, which I'm not going to repeat on the air, is all about habits that children get.
Right.
And if your daughter were to say that and wasn't corrected, that would have become a part of her language
right. On
a regular basis. So what has this become? Tell us what the tacky box is and what you get when you purchase a tacky box.
Okay. So the tacky box is a three-piece interactive set that consists of a children's book, which tells a story that encourages the child to want to choose kindness over tacky words and action, the box, and then the pad of paper. So the parent or teacher or therapist, we've got some play therapists using it, reads the book to the child. And at the end of that, you know, looks to them and says, you have a very important choice to make. Well, the child wants to make the same choice that the monkeys in the story made because it results in happiness and friendship and fun. And so they do. And then they write one of the words down from the story on a piece of paper and lock it in the box. And that's the individual set. And then we've also created classroom sets.
Now, your mother, Cindy Kent, worked with you
yes.
on this, and she's the one that put together the book.
Yes.
And came up with the idea for the monkeys.
Yes.
And what are the names of those books?
Margot's Magnificent Choice and Max's Magnificent Choice. Obviously, it's a girl version and boy version.
And she developed that concept and wrote the story.
She did. And she actually, it's been the most fun project because I never knew what a creative business person my mom was. She's an artist and a hippie. But so she, you know, she knew I was going to manufacture the boxes. And she said, wouldn't it be great to have a children's book to go with it that would tell Emma's story through the monkeys in the jungle and encourage the kid to make the right choice, because if they don't make the right choice, none of it works. And so I said, what a wonderful idea. Let me come out and we'll brainstorm, because I love to collaborate. That's how I do business. Well, not my mom. And so she said, oh, no, I'm not ready for that. And then by the end of the day, she shot me the draft, the first draft of the story. And so then we collaborated from there, and she did all of the watercolor art that's in the book and everything.
How did Emma feel about the fact that her life was being portrayed by monkeys in the book?
You know what? She loves the book. The only thing she doesn't like for us to play the promotional video that's on our website, because she doesn't want people to know that she used a tacky word.
Well,
and even when we shot that video, the videographers wanted her to reenact the story, and she refused because she said, I don't use that word anymore.
Well, there's a piece of it where you have her go to her room, and she goes to the room, she sits on her bed, and she begins to think. And that's something else, too. You might want to go to tackybox.com, take a look at that, and the video is on there, too, and it'll give you an idea how all that started. So now this has become a big business for you. So people
yes.
can go there, and they can go to Tackybox, who I'm looking at right now, tackybox.com, and actually order them on the website. Is that the only place they can get these?
We're in a couple small stores right now just to test the concept. Ideally, we'd like to sell the individual ones online. And so we're doing a lot of social media to drive traffic there. But the real opportunity that we see, of course, we're going to sell some of those online, and that's great for moms to use with their kids. But my heart is in a place where I want to get it. If we're going to really change the world, we need to get it to every single kindergartner, not just the ones whose parents are going to go purchase that from them. And I've seen how influential kindergarten teachers are with these kids. And so our goal is to get classroom sets into every kindergarten classroom in the country. How we're going to do that, I'm not sure yet. But again, that's part of my business hippie mentality. There are people out there who have expertise in those areas that can help me if they're passionate about the cause. And there's plenty to go around. So if I can just find the right distribution channel, we'll make it happen.
Well, let's take this even farther, because you have something called Campaign for Kindness. Tell us about that.
Yes. Campaign for Kindness is a grassroots effort to get these into schools so that we're arming every child with it. Because again, we can change the environment in our home with our child, but you're still sending them out into the world, and they're going to experience other things. So if we could then take that message from home and put it into their classroom or their whole school or their whole district, then that's how we're really going to make change. And so our goal is in the fall of 2014 to have it in as many kindergarten classrooms as possible in North Texas.
What has been the acceptance of this as you talk to kindergarten teachers? How do they feel about it?
They love it. It was so funny, Steve, because, I mean, I can speak in many places and not get nervous, but I went and pitched a room full of kindergarten teachers a couple weeks ago. My voice was shaking. My hands were shaking. I was very nervous to approach them because it's close to my heart, and it's a big deal to me. And the principal told me I needed to sell all the teachers on it because they're so busy. They have so much to do. This is one more thing for them. And every single teacher signed up to do it. And one teacher even agreed to translate the book in Spanish for me. So, again, just it's a collaborative effort of people helping to make a difference, which I love.
And the last thing real quickly, we need to end here, but you are now going into actions in addition to words.
Yes.
As you're building on this.
Yes. So the first book we did is all about words and the impact of words. And the second book that we're working on now is action-based. And then the third book, so that we'll have a trilogy, is about the ripple effect. And it shows children, if they are kind on the playground or kind in the lunchroom, how that translates over to their friend next to them, and that ripple effect occurs.
Well, if you are a parent with a young child or a grandparent with a young grandchild, please go to tackybox.com and check it out. It's absolutely fantastic. Chris, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you.
Chris Phelps is the business hippie who started Tackybox, tackybox.com. Don't go away. After our break, we're going to speak with Stan Stevenson. Stan is the managing director of Sendero Wealth Management. We'll talk all about that right after this.
Eat a sub at Jersey Mike's in March and help wipe out kids' cancer. All DFW Jersey Mike's locations are donating money to wipe out kids' cancer for every sub sold this month. On Wednesday, March 26, WOKC Day, Jersey Mike's will donate 100% of sales to wipe out kids' cancer. Eat a sub at Jersey Mike's this month and make a difference for kids with cancer. Visit WOKC.org for more information.
Operation Kindness is the oldest and largest no-kill animal shelter here in North Texas. Each day, its staff and volunteers care for an average of 300 homeless dogs and cats in its shelter in Carrollton, plus 100 more animals living in foster homes throughout the Metroplex. Learn how you can adopt, donate, or volunteer with this nonprofit group by visiting their website at operationkindness.org or by calling 972-418-7297. operationkindness.org.
And welcome back to Playmakers Talk Show. Thank you for staying with us. We have our second guest, who is Stan Stevenson. Stan is Managing Director and a member of the Sendero Investment Committee, which is a wealth management firm. Stan came to Sendero in 2013 from the Wealth Advisor Group at Northern Trust. Prior to that, he spent 15 years as the Director of Marketing and Investor Relations at Dallas-based Belmont Wealth Management, a family office and privately owned wealth management firm. Stan, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you, Steve.
You've spent 22 years in the wealth management business, which is, for a lot of people, a lifetime. How did you get your start?
I think if you have been in the business community in Dallas for your entire career, as I have. I went to SMU, moved here 40 years ago from Hobbs, New Mexico. Worked for a big bank downtown for a number of years. A lot of people out of graduate school, I got my MBA at SMU, a lot of us went into banking, the three big regional banks. They've all failed since then. I ran into a very successful older gentleman in the commercial real estate development business, and he and I hit it off. It was at a fraternity function. He was in the same fraternity I was at a different university, though, and he said, you know, I don't see you as a banker. You've got more personality than that. You need to get out and be in marketing and talking to people and building relationships. So he just darn near hired me on the spot to work for him in the commercial real estate development business in leasing and later in property sales. And it was a great job. But as banking, you know, was a casualty of the, you know, disastrous times in the 1980s, commercial real estate also succumbed to that same fate. So in this city, for a period of time, one kept having to kind of reinvent himself or herself and adapt to a changing business environment. So I saw kind of a logical end coming to my commercial real estate development career, and so was fortunate enough to have a friend at a wealth management firm. Back then, I don't think we called it wealth management, back in 1992. We weren't that sophisticated. It was money management.
The world has changed a little bit.
It has. And so I went there as kind of a transitional period, but I liked it very much. Got all the requisite securities licenses. And the same gentleman came back to me, the one that I worked for in the commercial real estate business. And he said that he had started a family office to manage his personal assets, which were still substantial even after the real estate meltdown, and that he also had what was a money management business that later would become a wealth management business. So two times I worked for this fine gentleman, and that's how I got started in the business. Liked it very much. That business kind of wound down somewhat and became more of a family office. And I was looking around. Also went back to Northern Trust for a period of time. And then Sendero and I kind of found each other at the same time.
Now, Sendero is a San Antonio company, is that
correct? It is. So So you were asking how I got in the business. I mean, it started really back in 1992 with Northern Trust, and then with Belmont Wealth Management after that. And then really about the same time, late last spring, Sendero and I kind of just found each other. And this is kind of a neat story if you'd like to hear it.
I'd like to hear it. Tell us all about it.
Yes. Well, I have over the years mentored various students at SMU. 18 years ago, I mentored a young man through a program designed through the MBA school, the Business Associates Program, where they matched up a graduate of the MBA program with an undergraduate majoring in business at SMU at the time. This guy was really good, very sharp, a lot of fun to be with, from San Antonio. His father was a money manager in a very successful firm, so he understood the business. We talked a lot about it. I had him over to the Belmont offices numerous times. People there liked him. When he graduated, he came to work for us, about 7 years, and did a terrific job as an analyst, both for our traditional equities management side of the business, equities and fixed income, and our alternative investments, hedge funds, private equity. And went back to San Antonio, and he had known the people at Sendero for quite some time. So 18 years after I had met him and helped him in a mentoring capacity, and then later in getting a job with us at Belmont, he returned the favor, in tenfold by introducing me to the people at Sendero. So by the time we met, we really, both parties on the Sendero side and myself, we felt like we knew each other. And that was a great situation.
Well, we talked earlier about the fact that one of the reasons that you are now with Sendero is they needed presence in the Dallas-Fort Worth market, and you bring that because you have a lot of people know about your background in the wealth management business. But one of the things I saw on the website, which is Sendero.com, that's S-E-N-D-E-R-O.com, is something that your CEO, Scott McMillan, talks about, is the customized white glove service. Tell us about that and how that might differ from some of your competitors.
Well, we're very attuned to service, and I think a private, independent, Texas-based company can provide a higher level of service to entrepreneurs in the state of Texas, to business executives in the state. People who earn their living in Texas, I think, have kind of a instinctual or gut reaction when you tell them that you, too, are with a private, independent company based in this state. They sense that they will be a more important client, that they will be a bigger blip on the radar screen. Some of the very big companies become very impersonal as it relates to their clients. Ours is very personal, and we do tailor portfolios specifically to the client's objectives. We work with them on a very collaborative basis, and then we work to create an asset allocation strategy. We use all outside money managers that we have picked ourselves, that we have vetted ourselves. We have no proprietary product whatsoever. Everything we use is in the way of outside money managers. So it's a much more straightforward process, and it's free of conflict that way. You have no propensity to steer things to that area of expertise or an investment strategy that you employ in-house when you don't do that.
So there's less bias and you're focusing on the client.
There's none whatsoever. So the focus is entirely on the client, and it's a much better approach, I think.
Well, you have been doing this for quite a while, but your focus at Sendero is, according to the information I have, is affluent families, foundations, endowments, and charitable institutions. So do you spend a lot of time with those institutions to help them develop their wealth management?
Well, you have to find them first, and that's no easy undertaking. Typically, you meet people at a foundation through their board members. And that those types of introductions can come in various means. I have a large network of people that I work with, that I refer business to, and that they in turn refer business to me. So in the case of a foundation or endowment, you, again, work with them. Oftentimes you help them redefine their investment policy. And then you set forth with them a reasonable plan to achieve it, and you keep them involved. And that's part of our uniqueness. We don't take full discretion from any client. We want to work with them. And anytime we suggest a tactical allocation change or a change in money managers that we use, we go back to that client. We tell them why we've made the change, and they sign off on that saying, yes, we understand why, and we agree with what you have recommended. I think it's a great process.
So your business is all about the clients. It's focusing on them, understanding what they want, where they're going, and help them move in that direction.
That's exactly right. And I'm not in it alone. I have a very competent right-hand man. I wanted a guy that was considerably different than me. He's about 25 years younger. He's about, good Lord, it seems like a foot taller. He's 6'8", played basketball at TCU, a very bright guy, has also spent his entire career in financial services and in wealth management, and is a great right-hand man and sidekick, because we're not alike, but together, I think we kind of leave an impression upon people. It's a great team approach, and then we have a tremendous back office of 30 people out of San Antonio that help us in many, many ways.
So they can get a hold of you at sendero.com. Is there a number for your office they can contact you at?
Yes, we're in Preston Center. That was intentional. We wanted to be centrally located. 214-347-4372 is the main number. We also answer our cell phones. That phone rolls to my cell phone. So I think it's important to pick up the phone. If people call you, to me, I don't know, maybe it's kind of an old-style thing where you go out of your way to answer the phone. People like it.
Call Stan Stevenson. He will answer the phone. He will talk to you. Sendero.com. Stan, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
I appreciate it, and I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Playmakers Talk Show. My name is Steve Klein. Please check us out at PlaymakersTalkShow.com. You can see the guests we're going to have for this week. You'll hear, see their bios, and you can listen to the show from last week, PlaymakersTalkShow.com. See you again next week.
Who will Steve be interviewing next? Find out on Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein every Friday afternoon at 3 on 770 KAAM. Hear this interview again by going to Steve's website, PlaymakersTalkShow.com.